From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Noe Valley.
Napa, California.
I live in the Castro Fillmore District.
Vernal Heights.
Oakland, California.
Coming up, how will the city of Pacifica deal with erosion caused by relentless waves?
Currently, we don't have a plan, but this has really sort of brought focus to the need to figure out what we're doing in the longer term.
Then we'll meet a theatrical magician who keeps audiences amazed.
Okay, so we guessed the card. Okay, so we made your dollar bill appear in a lemon. That was amazing. You're all cheering for me. And then what?
Plus, we'll find out the answer to this week's Audiograph Mystery Sound.
It looks like a bunch of people in Halloween costumes having a party, and it smells like weed.
Erosion, illusion, and tailgate infusions. Today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. In the city of Pacifica, about 15 miles south of San Francisco, an apartment building is on the verge of falling off a cliff. Dozens of residents were forced to leave after recent El Nino storms sped up the erosion going on beneath the building. But they're having trouble finding places to go, and it highlights an ongoing problem for Pacifica. The storms have already destroyed a local seawall and damaged the town pier. That, plus the slow-motion building collapse, is forcing the city to come up with a plan for how to deal with the looming threat of its mighty ocean neighbor and still keep its identity as a quiet coastal town. KALW's Audrey Dilling reports.
When I pull up to the building at 310 Esplanade Avenue, all of the doors to the 20 apartments have yellow signs on them that say restricted use in big block letters. Most of the residents are already out. They're only allowed to go inside to grab their final loads. And that's exactly what Jeff Bowman is doing. He's packing his last boxes into a pickup truck parked out front.
And so what are you doing?
Moving.
Where is all that stuff going?
To a storage facility that costs an arm and a leg.
When I stopped into two of the three self-storage places in Pacifica, they told me, yeah, they'd gotten calls from Esplanade residents. But there aren't many spaces open right now. One worker said they've been full for about the past 3 years. She tied it to the affordability crisis going on in the Bay Area. People losing their homes and needing a place to put their stuff. But right now, it's not the economy pushing Jeff Bowman out of his home. It's the environment.
Are you concerned? You sound like you didn't want to leave.
Well, nobody does. It's just premature, I think, but it's the city, so.
For anyone who's seen the footage of the cliff below the building crumbling away in chunks, premature sounds more than optimistic right now. It sounds crazy.
Do you know where you, long-term, where you'll go?
I at this point, I'm just trying to move. Sweetheart, it's raining, and I gotta get out of the rain. Okay? I appreciate your time, though.
Right now, it's about noon. The forecast for today says another storm should roll in by about 4. It's supposed to bring 15-foot waves. And yes, that's more bad news for the cliff.
Pacifica has a somewhat special condition in that the materials that the cliffs are composed of are exceptionally weak.
Brian Collins is a researcher with the USGS.
So it's strong enough that it can form a vertical cliff face, but it's weak enough that it doesn't take that much to make it fall down.
All it takes is, say, some huge waves. As the waves crash against the base of the cliff, they erode the sand. And that can make the whole cliff face too steep, which leads to
cliff failure that might go all the way up to the top of the cliff.
Cliff failure, meaning the stuff at the top of the cliff doesn't have much below to support it, and it all falls down.
Hi there. Do you have a minute? I'm with KALW Public Radio.
Juliet Kolotkin is packing up apartment number 73. She takes my intrusion as an opportunity to shove a few items into a trash bag on her front stoop.
Where are you going?
Right now, I'm staying with my friend's house. And they offered me the Red Cross Center, but they don't have a shower over there.
The shelter was at a church, so the city gave out passes for people to shower at a nearby pool. Just a temporary solution until the residents could find a different place to crash. Right now, it's hard to find even short-term accommodations because of the Super Bowl.
It was very nice of them to do that for us. But I guess, yeah, until I find a place.
Will you be able to find similar rent?
No. We found this one here. It's going for like
She points to the building across the street.
Two bedroom is 2,400. One bedroom is like 2,100. So, you know, we have no choice. Though it's going to be hard. It's going to be $400 or $500 more of what you pay.
Do you feel safe? Do you want to be leaving?
Well, right now that I've seen the bluff, I think it's time to move. It's time to go.
Did you think about that when you moved in here? Was it a concern?
No, I love the place, you know, the view and the ocean, you know?
She opens the door wider so I can see straight through the apartment, through a sliding glass door in the back, to a vast ocean view.
Yeah. You'd like that, you know, but yeah, we kind of, you know, there will be a point where that's going to happen, but we don't know when.
We've been keeping an eye on that property as well for the last several years.
Lori Tinfo is Pacifica's city manager.
Because we were concerned that it was going to get to the point where it was no longer, that the integrity was compromised, and that's where we are now.
Tinfo says protecting this particular building, and now demolishing it, is the property owner's responsibility. Same with the second building he owns next door. But he actually declared bankruptcy last year, so Tinfo says it's looking like the city's going to have to pick up the tab to knock down both buildings, almost $1 million. And then she's got to worry about protecting the rest of Pacifica, because a lot of the city is built along the cliff or down near the beach.
More than half of our businesses are located in the coastal zone, and all of our hotels except for one.
Is there a long-term plan for preventing this kind of thing in the future?
Well, I'm glad that you asked that. Currently, we don't have a plan, but this has really sort of brought focus to the need to figure out what we're doing in the longer term.
Tinfo has only been city manager for about 2 years. She's not sure why there wasn't a clear strategy for how to deal with this kind of thing when she came on board, especially since it's happened before. She says maybe it's a lack of money or vision. But with increased concern over sea level rise,
this is not an issue that we can continue not to have a plan for the continued viability of the city.
For now, she's declared a state of emergency. That means she can try to get some of the $30 million California sets aside for disasters like this. She can only use that money for public property, like fixing the busted seawall and the pier. And as for the displaced tenants, a San Mateo County supervisor has promised to find the money to help them pay first and last month's rent.
I mean, some people look at the situation and say, why would you move onto a cliff? Like, would you want to live on that cliff?
No, I wouldn't. But people love to live close to the ocean. It's got a real draw for a lot of people. And yet it comes with hazards.
Down near the Pacifica Pier, people are starting to gather to watch the incoming storm. It's nearing 4 o'clock when the big waves are supposed to start rolling in. It's still just drizzling. John Bueno is leaning against the pier with a hot cup of coffee.
Do you have any idea how tall these waves are?
These are probably about, well, the waves right now, they're calming down a little bit. They might be like around 10 feet.
Bueno says waves this big are pretty typical for this time of year.
But some of them, I've been watching them out there, and some of them are getting like around. Look at this one. Woohoo! Some of them, look at that one. It's getting up like around 15, maybe 20 feet. Maybe not quite 20 yet.
Bueno likes to come here to watch the waves. He lives just down the street, about a block off the beach. He says you can't beat the view. In Pacifica, I'm Audrey Dilling for Cross Currents.
Have you got questions you'd like answered about somewhere in the Bay Area? We think you might. So KALW has a new feature called Hey Area on our homepage where you can ask your questions and we mobilize our news team to answer them. Check it out at KALW.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Magician Christian Cadjigal combines his acting chops and sleight of hand to create unforgettable onstage illusions. His critically acclaimed solo shows use storytelling and audience participation to create intimate and disarming experiences. Christian Cadjigal talked with KLW's Jen Chien about putting the bite back into magic.
Your shows do have that ease and an intimacy that other kinds of flashier magic presentations don't have.
Right.
You're also a trained actor, which seems like that has a lot to do with how you use your voice and how you bring narrative and storytelling into the performance. Can you talk about your training as an actor? You went to San Francisco State. You studied theater.
Yeah, studied theater at SF State. Graduated in 2009. I loved SF State because it didn't have a lot of money anymore. And that meant everybody, like, what you put into it is what you were going to get out of it. That, I think, was the best training I could have. Because it was always, from the beginning, my life has been DIY theater.
And what about how the theater training has affected how you see putting together a show, putting together a magic show?
There's no formal school and training for magicians. So it's pretty much, I have a table full of my stuff off to the side. I'm going to go pick up the next trick, do it for you, put it back down on the table, pick up the next trick, do it for you. So for me, it was like, well, how can I take the things I was able to glean from, you know, costume design and set design and whatnot. And part of my aesthetic comes from not having a lot of things, not having a lot of money.
Some of the things came from that. Yeah.
So it was that, and along with kind of loving strange objects and antiques. So I was like, oh, I could just like go through my mom's old stuff, right? I could go to like cheap antique stores, like on the west side of San Francisco, and find stuff there, and start filling up a room with all those things, and those old items just tell their own story, you know. So they become your props, they become your set.
And your storyline.
And the storyline.
Uh-huh.
And so that's me kind of creating this unity of the prop to the set, because sometimes they're the same thing. That starts deciding how I dress. I can't wear a tuxedo. I can't wear a suit. It's like, how does a person who has a bunch of old stuff dress? Oh, maybe like slacks and a sweater, like a Mr. Rogers type, but like a creepy Mr. Rogers type who has weird things in his house, you know? And it's like, oh, well, if I'm going to be doing all these things with weird old items, that's going to be kind of spooky. Oh, I can't be cute and funny anymore. Oh, I need to go darker.
Hmm.
Oh, I never thought I would go in that direction. Oh, go darker. Oh, that means I have to kind of weird people out a bit. I have to be okay with making people feel uncomfortable. Because sometimes I put people in a lovingly uncomfortable situation.
Can you describe a moment like that in one of your shows?
In my show, The Collection, which is essentially a room full of strange antiques, and
I'm like, collection.
And I'm the Mr. Rogers telling you stories about each strange antique and involving someone each time into that story.
An audience member.
Yeah. At the very end, someone has to make a very important choice. I won't say exactly what that is, but it's kind of reminiscent of the old story of if somebody presented you with you a button that you could hit and it could kill anyone in the world that you wanted, would you do it? And no one would find out.
That's pretty dark.
It's not that exactly, but it's reminiscent of that. And just kind of let you decide. And I've built the entire show to lead up to this one moment, and now there's one person on stage who has to make this choice. And I kind of sneak off into the corner. And on some nights, like, the audience would be yelling and screaming for their soul, like, do it, don't do it, do it, you know? And you would see them fight, and it's a lovingly terrible thing I'm doing to an audience member.
And very compelling as a theatrical moment.
Yeah, and because I don't need the magic to be about me and winning anything or whatever. I'm already the magician. I already get to do cool things. I'm sort of at least in a pretend position of power. For me, it's more fun to make the experience about you. And good or bad, it's like, I want, you know, what does that say about us when we're cheering for somebody to hit the button or not? What does it say about you when you're thinking about it? You know, what choice did you make at the end?
It was a chance for self-reflection.
Right.
Uh-huh.
I don't want to call it a shamanistic experience. But I am.
But is there something of that in?
Yeah, because magic, art, science, religion all came from the shaman. Once upon a time, the weird person at the edge of town who understood history and understood a little bit of medicine and would throw in some trickery to get you to stop freaking out about something or give you a transformative experience, you know. And in the 20th century, in an attempt to distance ourselves from from fake psychics and using fake paranormal powers to manipulate people, we have kind of taken a lot of the bite out of magic. It's very light. It's very pleasant, you know.
Or it's just for kids. That's what a lot of people think.
Exactly. Uh-huh. And there's nothing wrong with doing magic for kids. In fact, it's really hard to do magic for kids. You know, there's in the past 30 years, 40 years, like there's sort of been this like little underground movement of, can we put some of the bite back into magic without trying to look like we're trying to start a religion and offend people? Can we just put some of this bite back into magic? And so that's been my attempt of like, in a safe theatrical place where hopefully I've created enough rapport and you trust me in a weary way or a leery way. Can I give you your own magical experience that maybe makes you consider yourself, the world, the universe, everybody else around you, and maybe can be a little transformative? You know, if you ask me during the show, is everything I'm doing real? I'll say, what do you think? Because I want you to confront what you think is real and what you think is not.
Play with that boundary.
Exactly. Like if you are a believer, I want you to wonder, well, he's probably just doing tricks. And if you're a non-believer, I want you to go, I don't know if he's just doing tricks.
How could he do that?
Right. Because I think nothing's more human than realizing that you maybe really want to believe in something.
Where do you see yourself in the landscape of magic or the history of magic?
So there does seem to be this thing happening, particularly in the past 20 years, magicians like me thinking to ourselves, okay, and what else? Okay, so we guessed the card. Okay, so we made your dollar bill appear in a lemon. That was amazing. You're all cheering for me. And then what? Maybe to a certain degree, we're not appreciating how amazing making your dollar bill appear in a lemon is.
Because you've seen it 1,000 times.
I've seen lots of things appear in lemons. Oh my goodness. Sometimes whole shows are coming out of lemons. But, you know, how can we make it a piece of art and theater? How can we say something? How can we create an experience? And more magicians have been trying to explore that.
That was magician Christian Cadjigal speaking with KALW's Jen Chien. You can catch Cadjigal's solo show Obscura tomorrow night at the Victoria Theater in San Francisco, or as part of the Fog City Magic Fest, February 10th through 13th at Exit Theater in San Francisco. And find all that information at KALW.org. Click Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. And now it's time for Audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature. Here's KALW's Julie Kane.
All week long, we've been playing you this sound.
It looks like a bunch of people in Halloween costumes having a party, and it smells like weed. No one here cares where you grew up or the color of your skin. They just care that you're wearing silver and black.
And where we recorded it, KALW's Liz Mack and Jeremy Dalmas met some people in an Oakland parking lot who can tell you more.
My name is Rob Fredrick. This is the experience that you come for. It's the game is, you know, the dessert. But this is the main entree. You come in and do the tailgating, and everything after that is just all gravy.
Tri-tip, pork loin. Look, that's what you want to see. That's where the big stuff is. For the fat guys. Yeah, I'm going to move them over. Give me a second. I just want the cheese to melt.
Tell them a story.
Come on.
God, how many years have you been coming here, Brad?
30 years.
That's a long time.
Yes, my name's Brad Shoeback. The Raiders are synonymous with Oakland. And that's the way it should be. I'm not a 49er fan, never have been. My parents had season tickets to the 49ers, and I sat in a car with a black shirt on.
Really?
Absolutely. Raider fans are just basically, blue-collar people. Nothing fancy. You know, it gets to the subject about, are we white wine drinkers? No. You go to some of the fancier stadiums, it's a whole different crowd. It's getting so expensive, it's out of the price of working people. And I don't think that's right. Anyway, it's time for a beer.
Okay. What are you drinking?
Coors Light.
Is it okay if I record you guys playing some music?
My name is Carolyn Reyna. We live in Covina, California.
When did you leave?
We left Friday night and we drove, I think, 3.5 hours. And then Saturday morning we got up and we finished driving another 3 hours. This is our trailer, yeah, because we're season ticket holders for 8 years. And I got tired of staying in the Motel 6 because at night there's nothing but men. Now I have got my own bedroom, got my own kitchen. That's my bedroom over there. You can see it. And then there's a bathroom. We've got our own kitchen.
You even got the Raiders shower.
Yeah, everything. Yeah. It's just all Raidered. It's black and gray, and we have all kinds of Raider memorabilia everywhere. It's all black and silver.
We got cognac, we got fireball, we got vodka, we got pineapple vodka, we got mango margarita, we got whatever you need!
My name's Kerry, everybody calls me Kay. I do Pro Park, I work for Pro Park, I park all these cars for Raider fans, for the tailgate. We start at 6. 6 in the morning, people are in line at 6 in the morning, ready to go. We don't open the gates till 8. But they're here ready to go. They want every minute of it. Because win, lose, or draw, these fans are here, man. Rain, sleet, snow, whatever. You know, they don't drop off. So I gotta go park a car real quick.
My name is Rob Hobart. I'm a lifelong Raiders fan. It looks like a bunch of people in Halloween costumes having a party. And it smells like weed. This is the least racist place you will go. No one here cares where you grew up or the color of your skin. They just care that you're wearing silver and black. I love the Raider Nation.
Thank you, sir. No alcohol beyond this point. Thank you so much. Thank you. Excuse me, sir. Excuse me, sir.
Give me your first and last name.
Irvin Livingston Jr.
How long have you been a Raiders fan?
I mean, since I was a kid, about 38 years. Since I was a baby, when I came out of the womb, I said, Raiders. If you walk and you say Raiders, and you don't even know that guy, he's going to tell you Raiders and say, hey, you want a beer or a shot? You hungry? That's the Raider environment, Raider Nation. Hey, what's your name?
Joseph, man.
Irvin, see? That's how serious it is.
Oh, you guys have just met each other right now.
It's Raider Nation. That's how it works.
See, look, throw him the ball. Oh, and that's a cop right there that we're talking to. See, even the cops love us. Only at the game. On the street, nuh-uh. We can't talk about no. Raider games are the best.
That piece was produced by KALW's Jeremy Dalmas and Liz Mack. The story is part of their new series, The Cutaway, which looks into Bay Area subcultures. Now, as you heard, Raider Nation is going strong, but the future of their favorite team in the Bay Area isn't clear. The Raiders' stadium lease expires this month, and the owner says the team is in the process of negotiating a one-year extension. There is a possibility that the Raiders will leave Oakland. It's happened before, and it might happen again. And that would leave a big, empty parking lot on game days. A lot of you called in this week. Thanks to all our Audiograph fans. It's always great to hear from you. Our winner is Robin Young. Congratulations. We're going to send you a KALW t-shirt. For the rest of you, we'll have a new mystery sound next week. Ready for your sneak listen? Here we go.
One of the unique things about this room is the collection of cool-growing orchids.
You know, she's been here for 136 years, and honey, if I look this good at 136, awesome.
Think you know what that was and where we recorded it? Give us a call and tell us. 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. We'll tell you the story behind the sound next week. Until then, thanks for listening and thanks for playing. I'm Julie Kane.
Thanks, Julie. If you've got ideas for where we should record next, let us know about them. Email us at news@kalw.org. Because of you, we can proudly say we're listener-supported public radio. Our team includes Shireen Adil, Leela Day, Nina Gensler-Debs, Chris Hoff, Angela Johnston, Ian Lewis, Casey Miner, Ted Muldoon, Raja Shah, and Stephen Short. Today's show was engineered by James Rowlands. The line producer was Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Sheehan. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This music is by Cascada de Flores. They appear Sunday at the Walt Disney Family Museum in San Francisco's Presidio. It's a family show, and it starts at noon. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.
Claveles.